Access number 14972, Richard Atkinson, Reel 11.
Mr. Atkinson, Reel 11. What was the battalion doing, Miss Atkinson, when you rejoined them?
Well, we were in the salt flats. I forget the name of it, but it was the salt flats. And we were getting ready to go into the Contour Depression at the extreme edge of the Alamein Line, sort of style, down into the desert.
You'd been made up to strength by now?
Yes, we were back up to strength. We had case from England came out on the Mary 8 days. I mean, they're going out on patrol and they hadn't been in the army 4 months. Some of them.
Obviously, some faces would have changed considerably because there'd been so many losses.
Oh, yes.
What was the situation with regard to your officers? Had they changed?
No. That's a funny part. We had a new MTO, a fella called Hooper, which I think he was the MTO in Dunkirk area. Eric Cooper, Mr. Hope I should call him. Because I remember him coming to me and he said, "Where's my kit?" And I said, "It's in the Libasic Canal alongside mine." So he must have been the MTO. But he came back from brigade after Ned Sparks was taken prisoner at Mercer to be MTO of the 9th again. So it was just changed, like into swapping round. We had. See, you wouldn't know the company officers because I didn't have contact with company men. If they didn't come through headquarters or they come to headquarters, I wouldn't really know them.
So you were still based with headquarters company?
Based headquarters, you see. We were just sent out to the companies to deliver stuff and do stuff and what was necessary.
Had the NCOs changed that you were working with?
No, we still... It's funny, the MTO never seemed to suffer much damage and casualties. But then again, you see, it was one of these things you learned, get out of the companies because your life expectancy in the company wasn't long, but in the transporter was longer. And it was one of these things you sort of... And it proved right, because the transport didn't seem to have many casualties, to be honest. Not dead, so there was wounded, but they came back to it.
Had your vehicles changed? Had you got new ones?
No, they were just made up. The vehicles we came down the desert with were just made up. And as they were falling to pieces, they were changed or cannibalised and made into new...
Montgomery would be coming in now.
Montgomery came in now.
What are the changes?
Oh, the vast change when he came in. For a start off, he moved all the officers up to the line. There was no base wallers miles and miles back. That they all came up. He came up and he would suddenly stop you on the side of the road and give you cigarettes or form a hollow square and talk to you, which had never happened before. And he made me do PT, which we didn't like. And he used a bit of a fanatic on health and getting your sleep net. He had his bad. But there is a vast change when he came. He really made the officers into the army. There was no skiving in the rear.
Had the retreat, the long retreat, affected your morale?
Well, if it had, I can't remember, because I got wounded. See, I didn't actually see them reforming on the ridge. And it soon picked up again if it had, but it was just a shambles which sorted itself out again. As usual, a shambles which was never explained to you.
The point I was trying to get was your own experience of, did Montgomery uplift the
yes.
morale?
Oh yes, Montgomery definitely, he made you feel that you're going to do something now. Because you see, a lot of talk, you know, I'm saying morale wasn't low. A lot of the fellows were saying, the next time I go up the desert, I'm not coming down, I'm going to put my hands up if it happens. There's quite a bit of that went on. There's no more, I'm going to be chased down, I'm going to put my hands up, be a prisoner. So he changed all that. He said, you're the conquerors, you can hammer these fellows without even trying. Yes, he definitely uplifted everything and, you know, brought it up. Pan.
Did you see him?
Yes, oh yes, quite often. It was nothing for him to stop. I was sitting on the side of the road as you went past, or wherever you were, I come to you and just said, "Hey, fellas, come around," and he just packs the cigarettes out to you and things like that. Oh yes, which was very, very unusual for them fellas, you know, red tabs, and you've never seen them before. they were next to God, sort of style. But he changed all that and he made all his echelons come up forward and everything was up near enough to the front.
When you moved into the line, where did you move to?
Well, we moved it. Well, they had no names. It was just in the Carntara Depression. There again, mines, the strewn in front of you. The 7th Armoured was down there with us. And we had a Greek brigade by this time because we had lost the 150 in Gazala. So I had a brigade of Greeks and they manned the gaps. And we were going out on patrols. You see, the patrols there was you got a truck and you tied a lot of these flimsy. I keep mentioning these flimsy because that's all we had. We hadn't the sense to use jerry cans like the jerry. These flimsies were tied on a string behind like a tail of a kite and drove round and round, kid them, sent up clouds of sand, dust, to kill them like there was tanks moving around. That was the kind of patrols it was. Or you collect all the letters, the mail, and you go scattering these empty envelopes from that part's sake, Australian envelope, to kill them that the Australians was down there, that sort of thing. I mean, the lads got surprised one day and they fought them back with picks and shovel things, you know, pick shafts, they were surprised. But that's the sort of thing that went down the Depression, because the main thing was going on with Alamein, towards the coast.
Did you get involved in this kind of subterfuge?
No. Squares did. I was one of these, by this time I'd learned when to say no and when to say, you know, when to step back and when to step forward. I mean, I've seen Jimmy Squares went out one day and the Greeks panicked and saw all this dust and the mine, put the mines in the gap. And when Jimmy Squares came back in, he went up in the air like a balloon. He come down and he says, I'll kill them bloody Greeks if I get a hold of them. That mine in the gap, you see, he just blew the truck up in the gap. But that's sort of, course, you sandbagged all about me at trucks in that front blast. You're pretty safe and there's no cabs on, so you just got blown out. And but that things like that used to happen.
What were the Greeks like?
Oh, they're all right. You couldn't speak their language, but you could nod to them and shout to them. You see, and we had a big cutout, I think it was Greta Garbo. The pin-up during the war.
Betty Grable.
No, the pin-up one, the long legs. I forget her name now. Betty Grable, was it? Yeah, Betty Grable. And a big cutout of her, full size. And that was at the entrance you went through the gap. And it didn't matter which truck went through, was stopped and spoke to her. The Greeks thought were balmy. You know, hello, Betty and all that. The Greeks thought were balmy. They couldn't understand it. But there's nothing else to do. You made your own entertainment. But they never went out on patrol or anything like that. They did that.
What were you doing down in that position?
Just general duties. Going seeking rations. Going back to Alexandra if there's any stuff to come up or any more reinforcements to come up or things like that. You're going back for them and picking stuff up. Maybe Plod had to go to a conference or something like that or somewhere. I'll take him down to the if it was brigade headquarters or wherever they were, take them. But it was relaxed. There was no stand twos and stand downs and things like that. This, it was just kid him. He couldn't come through and we couldn't go through. It was just a kidology sort of style.
So it was basically the same situation that you or work that you'd been doing up in Gazala,
yeah. Only on a much more relaxed stage because I knew he could see you and you could see him, but it was only Italians you were facing, so he didn't bother with them. They were nothing.
Did you see any Italians?
Oh, yes. Yeah. As soon as you saw Italians and you took them prisoner, the first thing you should show me, or me got 6 bambinos and photographs come out. And they didn't want to fight. They had no heart for them. They were completely different to the Germans. You didn't worry about the Italians. They were nothing.
Was the mail and parcels coming through from home?
Yes. Oh, yes. The mail was quite regular. But you see, you didn't bother writing. You used to send telegrams. And the telegrams then, yeah, you put like your mother's name, because it wasn't like your mother's name and address on, and you pick 3 numbers. And the numbers was, I am well, hope to see you soon. You know, could be like 16, 23, 54. And it was, I am well, hope to see you soon, look after yourself. You know, you just, and them numbers was telegraphed to England, not photostat and sent home. And that was you didn't bother writing. You could have a green envelope. You could use an ordinary letter if you wanted, but that had to be censored by your own officer, which you know, but I mean, the whole, and any time abroad, you had to, you could write, your officer censored it, but you could have a green envelope which was opened at the base, maybe, in this telegram business. In Egypt and that places, we didn't have the telegrams in France and those places, but over there you had this, and it used to wire the numbers.
Did you get parcels from home?
Yes, it was mostly cigarettes, but because my mother used to send me senior service, and we used to get cigarettes was duty free, not duty free, they were free issue cigarettes. We used to get 50 a week, what we called ship cigarettes, because they were bigger in a tin sealed, and there were captains and players, and the pipe smokers got pipes, baccy, and things like that. But you got 50 a week free issue, and these parcels was coming through.
How important were cigarettes to the soldier?
Oh, I think everybody smoked. I think, well, the odd ones that didn't smoke used to use them as a barter. But the cigarettes was everybody smoked. They were very, very. And then we started to get, by this time, we're getting what we call the Desert Victories, where Indian things are full of maggots, or atrocious things. But the Desert Bees, they were vile. But I suppose England was getting short by this time. You know, the war had been going quite a while.
So smoking, and were heavy smokers?
Yes. Oh, yes. I think everybody was. I think there was about two, I think, in the war that didn't smoke that I knew of. But you see, that again, you could get sweets, you could get chocolate. They were in the combo. By this time, you're on combo rations in a box for 14 men. There's a big box of sweets in there. Now I used to send a whole box of them home to Joan. When I got this was from France, but take the whole box of boiled sweets out, send to Joan and chocolate. You know. But you're getting those sort of things.
And these had replaced your iron rations, hadn't
they? Iron rations by this time.
So what else were in those packs other than sweets?
Well, you see, then again, QM stores get the A pack, which was taking kidney pudding. If you got a B pack, it was McConaughey's. You see, you knew what the letter was, A, B, C, D, and E. And you knew what was in. And I said, yeah, you've got A's again. Well, you made sure you got A's. You know, you weren't going to let him have an A. And you need, let him eat the A. But you knew what was in them.
And you've mentioned their two variants. Are there any other variations them?
Oh, yes. Yeah. You would have the steak and kidney in A. E was McConaughey. Another one would just be, what do you call it? Bully beef. Something like that. But it would have a better sweet in than what the A would have. If it had bully beef, you may get lion's cakes or something like that, you see. And if you had an A, you may just get a packet of biscuits. It was balanced out. But of course, you used to go for the main meal. But there were the tea, sugar, and milk, the boiled sweets, the toilet paper, there were seven cigarettes a man in. Things, they were standard. Just the very, like McConaughey's and bacon, it varied. Some could be Canadian bacon, some could be English bacon, stuff like that.
Was there much thievery going on back in the lines when these things were first coming in?
No. I suppose in the base depots, they would have their fingers in, and we would take the dry tea, you know, dry tea come in bulk, and the sugar, and the carnation milk, and you would take some for yourself, but there was never short. Each man got his full ration, and this was what the CQMS was going to hold as spares, you know, emergency, and Plot would find out and confiscate the whole lot of them. So you'd take a bit of dry tea, now. And if, as a company like this, going dry tea, they go, oh yes, there's some in the bag. You should keep your water bottle, really, if you want. But there could have been thievery going on behind the line. I don't know the service call, because we never had contact with them. But in the unit, no. Each quartermaster used to fight like a cat out of hell for his own men. And they made sure, and Plod used to make sure each man got his rations. There was no.
Beer, did that come through to you?
Yes, we used to get Canadian beer. And so you just get Starbeer, I think it was, well, I'm sure it was Egypt or Palestine, but that used to come up as well. Because other ranks are not allowed spirits. Sergeants and above could have spirits. But odd times, a couple of bottles of beer, a man would come up and things like that. Quite often, in fact.
And presumably that was meant used for barter for those that didn't drink.
Yeah, but you had to buy that, mind. But there was no money, but it was deducted in your pay books. Because I don't think you do pay for about 3 years, because it was. no money in the desert was no good to you. Broad was no good to you, unless you were in a place like Alexandria or something like that. And then they'd give you so much money to say you for if you had like 5 days leave for the invasion of Sicily, you were in Alexandria. But I never had any money, so it was just deducted from your pay book. But if a fellow he said yes, yeah, you can have me beer, but man, next time I want your cigarettes or something like that. You see that? But
how important was mail and
oh, very, very important.
Good quality
yeah.
food too.
Yeah, it was important because you know you look forward because we hadn't radios and that. You know, they talk about the Force of Sweetheart. We never even heard of a thing like that because we just had the local radio over there, but we didn't have radio sets, so you couldn't hear it. And but the mail and the food was important. I mean, if your rations was good, if a man had a satisfied belly, he was happy. There's no doubt about it.
Did you see any experiences of men who weren't getting mail and the effect upon them?
Well, Wakenshaw wasn't very happy with his mail. I mean, because his wife was on the game, you see, and that VC, it was unusual because evidently I didn't know you've got to be recommended by 4 independent witnesses or something. Something like that. Well, there was none, it was only us. And when we went back after Alamein, and he was still lying over his gun, the Germans hadn't shifted him. And I'd listened to post about 20 yards away from him, because, see, we on this ridge were asked if we could. We had what pay books and letters, and you know, we just scooped a hole and put them in and left them. And when we went back after Lamain, we were beside there, and we said, "Can we go?" I think there's a major, somebody had come from the 8th Battalion and taken over, Colonel of the 9th. Was it the Major Scott? No, it's Clark. Was it Clark? Clark had taken over the 9th. And he said, "Yes." And that man up there, go. And we went, and Wakenshaw was still lying over his gun. There was a German listening post there, a tent with a master. We scooped our envelopes and that was, you know, mail and paybook and that was there. And then this Clark, Colonel Clark, he saw this and he started this VC rolling. And he said, like, you know, that was explaining it to him. And the paramedic come and he says to me, "How are Wakenshaw?" I says, "Oh, well," I says, he wasn't too happy with his wife. I says, "I know you had wrote a green envelope and intercepted that before it got that." And that's why the VC went, which he hadn't to have. But it was through Colonel Clark, I presume he's a colonel by this time, who started this role, and they just had to take our word for it. And of course, the proof was there of him.
If we just dwell on this, because it is a little ahead of our story. So his body was still there when you got up to Merseytru, in the advance.
Yeah.
Presumably then he was buried.
Yes.
How was that done? Do you know?
I don't know. I think our pioneers would do that. You know, that was high headquarters company game. The pioneer section, they had all the crosses and they would do that. You know. But it was just a stone line thing, you know, where he was, and then he was reinterred into the cemetery. But because we just moved on, we just left him. You see, we didn't even bury him, but our pioneers would come up and do it.
To go back then to the line where you are in the south of the Alamein line, where was your position in relation to the battalion?
Just with them, with them. It was all just there.
This was not a box situation.
No. There was a line of mines cross in a gap in it, and it was just spread across. Because the new, there's nothing could come through it. You couldn't go in. It was a sea of sand. There's nothing, and it was just. Just this line of mines. If there were mines, because sometimes you used to put bully beef tins in the dummy minefields for the mine detectors, you used to put a lot of dummies in like that, you see. So you had to spend time probing it. And they were all dummy minefields, a lot of, you know, it makes that thing went down. He did the same.
Are minefields marked so you can see them and where they are, the boundaries?
On your side, and his side, you have just a line of barbed wire, and on his side, we would just have mines wrote, and on his side, you have a skull. And mine and underneath it. But by that time, if you got to his, you're through the minefield. You see what I mean? By the time you come to mine, so, and I know I say it was that, but he would do the same, strew bully beef tin, any tin. So when you come with a mine detector, mostly we have probe with a brain in it, you hit the tin, you have to treat it as a mine. It worked, you see. But it didn't kill, it still worked. Slowed you up and held you back.
Were there any weapons of the Germans which you particularly feared?
Oh, yes. His Spandos and his Smizers. He used to, you'd give your right arm to get one. If you got one, you know. That was his automatic weapons. Oh, I mean, he was superior to us with that equipment. I mean, he had his jerry cans. He didn't have an ounce of waste of his petrol and his water. We lost 3/4 of our petrol leaking. The registered soldier joints that used to leak out, run over the tailboard like a river, petrol. And they've been carried all the way from Alexandria, 300 miles, and run out all the way up there. Get there, he had a truck full of empty tins. He didn't. He had his jerry with which we copied. Things like that. We copied his mines and stuff like that. Well, you know, we didn't have automatic weapons, but we got the Sten guns, which is only copied a poor imitation of his Smizer. He was well equipped. His tanks could leave our standard, you know, things like that.
88 with
they were out this world. You were frightened of the 88. It was an anti-tank gun and an anti-aircraft gun. And you knew when he was ranging you with them, it was a weapon that was had to be feared and respected. But I mean, his mines, he had his S mines. Personally, he used to jump out the ground about 3 feet and maim you. Didn't kill you, but a man was out of the forces. He had to be fed, looked after, but he was useless. See, that's the way he worked. Well, we didn't think of things like that. He used to just little pins sticking out the ground. He stood on. He used to jump up about 3 feet. Catch you in the lower area, you're useless. Didn't want to kill you.
Were you involved in any attacks against you when you were in the southern area of the line?
Not in the southern area of the line, no. I don't think there was any attacks there by either side. It was just kiddology by both sides.
Did the kiddology include the dummy tanks and so on?
Dummy tanks. One fellow would come, or two or three fellows would come, and all of a sudden you'd have a fleet of tanks behind you. Overnight. And the next morning it would disappear and you'd suddenly find there were trucks. Or you'd find a dump. You see, God, look at the trucks in there. And it was stacks of food, the combo packs packed up, then there were things thrown on to represent 3-ton trucks. And you'd think there's a pack of three, but they're all ammunition and food. Oh, there's a lot of that went down, camouflage. This was starting and coming. This was Montgomery's idea. He brought all these things. He was all new ideas, and well, great. You know, we could see them working, and it did boost your morale. And when you saw all this stuff, it boosted, and it was up with you. You know, it boosted your morale. But there was a lot of that going on.
How were you living in the Alamein line? Were you in trenches or trucks or what were you doing?
No, just flop where you were, as usual. See, I mean, I suppose the lads would just dig in and put their ground sheets or something over the top, but I mean, there's no tents. It wasn't tented area, like in lines and things like that. It was just there's a company here and a company there and whatnot. No, I say the transport always slept on the other truck, never anywhere else.
23rd of October, what's your memories of that night?
Oh, well, that night we had to go up somewhere north, you know, towards the coast, and our job was to help the gunners. Well, carrying boxes of ammunition up towards the guns, you know, and they were taking them out and setting. We weren't doing any fighting, we were just helping shifting empty shell cases. And when the barrage went up, I'd never seen anything like it in my life. Daylight, bang, you know. A thousand of what number of guns it was firing. It was deafening, heartening, you know, it was lovely, but the noise and the fellows were stripped away in the middle of the night, and they were just loading, firing, and the shell case, empty shell case mounting up, and we were just thumping from, you know, further back, boxes of shells, and they were stripping and fusing them and whatnot.
So you were bringing up the shells?
Yeah, so we were just sort of like lackeys for to get stuff, so they hadn't to leave what they're doing to bring it. But that was the first I saw Alamein, and then we went back down to where we were.
What was the feeling? Obviously, as you say, it was a tremendous noise and sight. What was the feeling was going to hit the Germans' heart?
Oh, this was the end of the world as far as they were concerned. Nothing could survive that. There's no way, you know, you just walk through. you know, I suppose that was then telling the First World War. That was good. But we, oh yes, you don't worry, you'd be petrified after that, you'd be bomb happy. Didn't work, eh, but that's what we thought.
So what did you do next?
Now, well, we went back down to where we were. We took so many men up to, you know, that we were transport. We're not going to sit in the truck, so we just give them a hand. And then we went back down to where we were in the depression. And this next order for supercharge came, and we came up and just followed the troops through, actually.
What date was this, supercharge?
Oh, I think, I mean, it'd been going on a week or so, wasn't it? I can't remember, because as I say, he didn't know dates. He just knew it was a new day because it was late, and the next day it was coming. However long Aluminium was on towards then, when the breakout, actually, I think that was the final breakout when we put the supercharge in, and we went through, and the tanks that came through, and we stopped on this, I think it was Hat Track again, we stopped, and I went charging up the desert from there.
So when you moved from the south to the north, how was that movement made?
Just with Service Corps, trooped them up, and we went up with some of the ammo and whatnot.
You were supplies?
Yes, we were just there as our usual echelon, the echelon and B echelon. But the Service Corps would pick them up and take them up and close them. Then they would march into the start line, of course. You know, it says the RSC didn't take them in. It dropped them back in, you know, 3 or 4 miles, and they'd march up to the white tape start line.
Where were you in relation to the start line?
Oh, we would be 200 yards back or something like that.
As close as that?
Oh, yes, you as close as that. You're close, but, you know, it's just sufficiently back for the... You didn't hinder what had to be done.
So that attack went in. Mm-hmm. If they wanted supplies of your ammunition, how did that get up to them?
Oh, well, you see, well, we'd come back 303, wondered. It's been a truck and it's taken up. Somebody would go up with a truck. They wouldn't say, it's a sea coming truck. You'd just, truck. 303 in there, yes. They knew what was on, take it up. There'd be a guy to pick you up. Somebody would be standing there for you and saying what to do.
And he would drive through that corridor?
The driver would drive through and be a guy wherever he was. You couldn't go wrong because it was all tapes. Yeah, if you went, as I say, the tapes went to minefields, so you went through there and he would pick you up and say, right, and load, then you'd just come back. If the gap, there's red caps on the gaps, you know, and they would let you through and bring you back. And if you come back, the red cap would say, hang on, stuff has come to, and when it was clear, he'd let you through. They had our own red caps. We used to hate the sight of them, but they were good. They were there. They were up the front with you all the time, the red caps.
It was quite a dangerous task.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. The red caps, I mean, and if you're going anywhere, you had your own divisional red caps, though, with the 50 div. They wore the 50 div teeth. And they were up with you all the time. And, you know, they're controlling traffic, and if fire ambulance is up and back and things like that. On the crossroads, yes. Oh, they were just as, you know, they were in the wood. They weren't out of shell fire range.
Did you get involved in taking stuff through?
No, I didn't. See, by this time I'd learned to keep a plod. And he only went up when the colonel sent for him. So if the colonel sent for him, he wanted somebody, I'd have to take him up.
So you were driving for this chap?
I was driving plod by this time.
You weren't on a truck with carrying anything?
No. See, and it had its advantages because you'd say to me, the lads had put a push in, they'd been having a rough time, and they'd come out and they were scruffy, trousers were ripped, and he'd say to me, you're a bloody mess, Atkins. I mean, I wasn't. Go and get yourself, you know, I'd go to the stores and get myself a new suit or a hat or whatever it was that needed, and I'd be standing there like a tailor's dummy. The lads would come out and he'd have a kit inspection for a new kit. Well, I used to feel sorry for him. He'd say to them, you can darn that. You can mend that pocket. Where's your field dress? You know, and I was standing like a tailor's dummy. Never seen a thing. And the lads didn't resent it, but they used to give you some awful looks. But see, that was, you learned all these tricks. By this time, you're getting wise to yourself. You say, well, if I'm driving him.
So when you came out of hospital and convalescent, you'd gone back to that officer to drive him?
No, I'd gone back to the transport section. But I was in the headquarter stores, you see. He says to me, oh, you're back at it. So I just took over back again. That was the way they worked. There was nothing formal about it, you know, just it was still a territorial unit, family unit.
Do you recall the men coming back from the attack and the condition they were in?
The, they stopped there. They didn't come back. They brought, forced their way through, I think, the Highland Division, Brigade of the Highland Division, I think 152 or something like that, I don't know. And they forced their way through, got the gap, tanks and everything went through and just flocked through, and they stopped there. We actually stood there, and they did, and when they were clear, the battle was way, you know, 50, 60 miles away. The sort of congregate got them back into regiments, and, you know, companies and whatnot.